Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the Sworn American Sheepdogs, and today is Monday, November 2nd, 2015, and I'm Joe Sworn. You know, every once in a while, tonight's going to be another one of those episodes where I get to have one of my actual heroes in as a guest. And not just because he's got a celebrity status, but because he's actually one of my heroes. And so that's great. You guys all know who he is. And we'll bring him in here in a minute. He does those videos on YouTube and Facebook, the active self-protection videos. And, you know, where a lot of the times there will be, you know, videos, usually involving violent situations, and he breaks them down for the audience and, turns them into lessons for us. And he does a perfect job, and it's just so great to see every one of them. Now you can go over to his page on Facebook, just search active self-protection, and he posts quite a bit of other stuff too, cool articles, things that are in our demo, as we say here on SAS Dogs. So I can't wait. I'm really excited for it. So we'll get to it here in a minute. I'm going to go ahead and play our usual tune to let the cues populate and saddle up. Tonight should be absolutely spectacular. I am super psyched for it.
I am.
Well, you heard the intro, so You know how excited I am to have you here tonight.
Man, you have me blushing.
Can't see it through all that scruff. I was telling John before the show that I've been listening to him a long time and following him a long time, and I can gauge how long I have been one of John's followers by the length of his facial hair.
By the facial hair. You know, I joked that I started the beard length for No Shave November last year, so yesterday was 1 year of not trimming the length of my beard, and we'll see how long my wife lets me get away with it.
It's going wide and down at the same time. You got the full, you know, spectrum. It's like a sideways mohawk on your face.
Yeah, awesome. A little bit. You know, tried to keep the sides at bay somewhat, but, you know, it's just been a goofy thing, and now it's kind of funny because, you know, I thought for, you know, at the end of No Shave November this year, I might trim it off, and some people responded with great horror that I would, you know, deface my facial mane.
So for those of you that just tuned in, this is, okay, now do we pronounce your last name Korea?
Korea, just like the country spelled funny.
Okay, just like the country spelled funny. John Korea, but you all know him just as simply John. When he says, hi, this is John from Active Self-Protection at the beginning of his videos. Yeah. I have shared, there's two groups that on Facebook that I admin, and I think I post all of your videos. As a matter of fact, I get, you know, sometimes I get kind of embarrassed because I do them all, and then you'll put those, you'll go ahead and post an article or something that's really cool. And yeah. So I don't appear to be such a fanboy. Sometimes I'll follow the link actually to the article and then just share it right from the article. So it doesn't look like I share absolutely everything you post, but everything you post is so great. Okay, so now that I've said that, I'm going to go ahead and just share them directly, and everyone can just go ahead and call me a fanboy because I definitely am. Tell us about Active Self-Protection.
Well, you know, we started Aspen. I started in 2011, actually. I mean, it'd be a long story, but I started the business in 2011, honestly, at its very beginning, to write off guns and ammo, because I'd gotten into shooting and self-defense and firearms. I'd been, you know, training in martial arts for a few years and concealed carry and all that. So I was like, man, I got to find a way to get some write-offs on this. And so what better way than to maybe get some teaching certs and do some classes, and then at least I can write off stuff. So that's where the business was founded. I actually founded the Facebook page in 2012 because, like an awful lot of instructors, I was having a hard time getting enough students in class to really make them go. So I thought, man, it was really twofold. Number one, it was to get some more students in class if I could build a following. But then also on my personal Facebook, I got a lot of blue-haired ladies. You know, I pastor a church for a living. So, you know, I thought, man, I got to get all this gun stuff off my Facebook. So I founded the page in 2012 to do that, and then it just became a game to me. I'm competitive, so I thought, you know, well, man, what if I really worked at this? And, you know, then I started following what Facebook does and how to help people and how to actually get people to engage and give them good stuff, and then it's just kind of blown up from there. You know, I told the fans on the page, October 12th of last year was the very first narrated self-defense video I ever did. People started sending me videos. I'd post them with some, you know, thoughts in the description. And then it was just really honestly an absolute mistake. I found out that I could record audio over the top of them. And
oh, you mean your first narrated video was an accident?
Well, it was. So I was actually, for about a year before that, Facebook for a while was really doing memes a lot. They were pushing memes, pictures. And so I had gotten Adobe's Creative Suite, the Creative Cloud membership, which
sure.
for Photoshop. So I was doing Photoshops and trying to make quality pictures that taught a story, that said something. And I've still got those. They're still good. And then video started taking off, and so people started sending me videos. So I got one, and it was on October 12th, and somebody sent it to me, but it was too long. So I thought, gosh, I looked up in my Creative Cloud, and I was like, oh, I have Adobe Premiere. I don't know the first thing about it, but maybe I can chop the end off so that it's not so long and boring. You know, so we don't.
No,
have
you can
to
edit
to, you know,
with Adobe Premiere, and it has some effects and all that.
Well, I didn't know all that.
Yeah.
All I knew was maybe I could chop the front end. So I did that, and then I hit a button, and all of a sudden it started recording. I was on my MacBook, and it started recording audio through the mic. And I was like, wow, that's really cool. I can actually record audio. Why don't I just narrate it? Why don't I just give it a play-by-play? And those have been – people have gone nuts for them. So from
for
that
sure.
point, if you go back and look at the first one to today, we've got about 400 now narrated self-defense videos on the page. We put a new one up every day, and those have been – those are definitely what people know me for, is taking real-life situations, whether the victim or a good guy lives or dies.
Yeah.
Saying, you know, if he made it, why did he make it? What were the keys to his success? And if he didn't, where did it all go wrong? And I think people really appreciate him, and it's great for me to be able to help people.
Well, yeah, they say, you know, a picture's worth 1,000 words, and at 29 frames a second, you can do the math on what videos are valuable for. There's
yeah.
a million lessons to be learned. For the audience, most of the videos, they're robberies, carjackings, just assaults, random acts of violence. It all has to do with being, you know, the audience are those that have taken an interest in protecting themselves. And so John will talk a lot about force multipliers, force equations. Let's define those for the audience real quick. Let's talk about what the force equation is.
Well, so, you know, when we say we talk about a force equation, it's how much force can you generate and how much force can you bring to bear to protect yourself and your loved ones. So a bad guy's going to come and he has a certain amount of force that he can bring, whatever that is. And usually you're going to get attacked by somebody bigger, stronger, and faster than you are. I mean, they're not going to come and try to beat you up. You know, an 85-year-old woman is not going to come and try to mug me. and so when we talk about the force equation, we say – who has the greater ability to generate force? Now, it doesn't mean they always have to use it, but usually a bad guy, you know, a mugger, a rapist, an armed robber, a carjacker, somebody like that, they're going to come in a place where they have more force. So then we, you know, when we talk about a force multiplier, and, you know, some people like those terms and some people don't. I do because it's a generic term. Not everywhere
like
in the world and not everywhere in the country can people have firearms, but, you know, a firearm, a knife, a bat, a stick, they all add to your ability. They multiply your ability to generate force. They don't generate force on their own. A bat lying on the ground doesn't generate force, but you put it in your hands and you swing it, and it greatly impacts and multiplies your ability to generate force.
Right, and it's not just limited to weapons. It could be your footwear, flip-flops versus
absolutely.
Some strapped-on Nikes.
Right, absolutely, and versus – you know, steel-toed boots or something. So
sure.
when we talk about having a force multiplier, that allows you to change the force equation. So, for instance, when a CCW holder, you know, when a mugger comes and you know, says, hey, man, give me your wallet or I'm going to beat you up or I'm going to kill you with my fist, when you pull that firearm out, all of a sudden he didn't know what the force equation really was because you had a multiplier he didn't know about. So having those is a good thing, and I always tell people, you know, carry the most effective force multiplier on you that you can that's within the bounds of your life. I carry a pistol every day, not because it's the best force multiplier. If I needed a greater one, I'd carry a rifle. But it's with my life better than carrying a rifle, I carry a handgun.
And a pepper spray or one of those little
yes.
mini baton keychain things, those are force
mm-hmm.
multipliers too. Matter of fact, it'd be a good idea to carry all three, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I do carry a pepper spray all the time as well. I think having a range, you know, of options.
Yes.
The cutting edge anymore, you know, some people talk about the force continuum, and, you know, that's a little bit of older kind of doctrine. But having force options is a great idea. I've never used my pepper spray personally against another human being. I have used it twice on dogs to protect myself from getting mauled. But having that for a non-lethal threat is great because a gun is a unitasker. It has one port, you know, has one use for a deadly force encounter, for a deadly threat. And there are a lot of threats that a gun is not the right answer for. So having other answers when you need other answers is a good thing. So I carry a pepper spray as well.
For sure. There's so many I just put like 10 pens in different things as you said it because I want to talk about them. I'm sure you get that a lot. So let's talk about concealed carry and let's mm-hmm. talk about pistols. Hold on a second. Let's put a pin in a pin in that. A pin in something that's already pinned up. I want to tell you something before I forget that I share a lot of things on Facebook with the different groups and my page. And my other page from the other shows I've done in the past. This audience is particularly perfect for you. This is your audience that you're speaking to tonight. Most of them are familiar with you. Yeah. A lot of things I'll post, you know, will generate discussions, will generate comments, but there's one thing and your posts that I share generate discussions and comments. But one thing that is particularly unique about every time I share one of your videos is the members of the groups that I share them to thank me for sharing your video. And I don't get that from in any other, I usually don't get a thank you for sharing. So I just want to extend that to you. I hope that you, wow. you understand what I'm saying is that your audience is not only compelled by your videos, but they're thankful to receive them, which is really, really super cool.
You know, all right. It's been an incredible thing that for the last 8, 9, 10 months, year, I get probably at least one message on our Facebook page a week, at least, of somebody saying we saved their life. And that's not
wow.
because I'm a kung fu master, but, you know, I get story after story after story. And they usually revolve around somebody saying, hey, I found myself in this situation, and I thought to myself, damn it, there's no way that I'm going to be on this guy's video. There's no way I'm going to hear, and this is where he should have bugged out. And, you know, it's incredible to me. So I'm super grateful. The fact that, you know, so many people let me into their lives every day is it is humbling. It's a great responsibility and an incredible blessing to me. So I'm really grateful. Think about how cool it is that, right? I mean, today I think our Facebook page is somewhere over 176,000 fans.
Yeah, that's great.
I just posted yesterday. I posted our numbers for October, and in the month of October, you know, we reached 6.5 million people, unique people, in the month of October. And the fact that 6.5 million people would listen to something that I say is a very sobering statistic.
These aren't lurkers either. These aren't people like your page and move on. These are active, not to throw the word around too much, but this is an active audience that you have. I would imagine that, you no longer have to search for these videos. They come to you. You no longer have to search for customers. You're probably booked and trying to figure out how to get yourself a cloning machine, aren't you?
I am, you know, in some respects. So I'm traveling this weekend. I live in Arizona, and I'm traveling this weekend to Dallas, Texas to do a class and, you know, I to do a weekend of real encounters training so that, you know, people can get some training.
What is a real encounters training?
So every week, I do it twice a month here in Phoenix at our martial arts school. When I say our, I mean the school that I train at. I don't own it, but I'm a member of Attitude First Martial Arts Academy here in Phoenix. And so what we do with the real encounters is we take one of the narrated self-defense videos. Usually it's a recent one, so we take a video that we just watched. For instance, I just posted one on the page a few days ago of a man who was murdered standing in a foyer, in an entryway, and he had some opportunities, but he just couldn't take them. And another man.
How about the two motorcycle helmet guys?
Yeah, the two motorcycle helmet guys. So what we'll do is we'll watch that video and we'll say, wait a minute. Okay, so now then in class, I put people in that situation and I pair them up and I say, here you are, and I just want you to experience from the bad guy's perspective and the good guy's perspective, go and experience it. And they go for a while. And then we huddle up and we say, okay, so what worked and what didn't, and what did you find that was effective and what wasn't effective? And I give them something to try. Okay, try this. This worked well for this person, for that one. Let's think about the logic here. Let's think about what works and what doesn't in a realistic encounter, find a new partner, and work on it some more. And we spend, you know, anywhere from an hour and a half to 3 hours, depending on the class,
wow.
working through you know, iteration after iteration, repetition after repetition, partner after partner, of finding ways to defend ourselves against that. So when I do live training as the trainer, I mean, obviously when I'm the student, I do whatever my teacher is teaching, but when I'm the teacher, it is real encounters based. Watch the video. This is what happened to this guy. So now let's put ourselves in that situation and see how we can overcome and how we can build skills from wherever we are to be more successful there.
Tell us about your active shooter training. That must be one that is quite popular or at least gaining popularity because of the shootings that – go ahead.
I wish it was, man. It frustrates me, frankly. I have three kids right now in the public school system in Arizona. My wife and I have four children. My oldest is 18 and out of high school. But, I have three children in the public school system. And so I have one in elementary school, one in middle school, one in high school right now. And honestly, every single principal, and I've actually also taught, I've taught at the undergraduate and the graduate level. And currently teach just at the graduate level, not at the undergrad. And I've offered every single dean, every single principal at every single level, let me come in and help your people who are not armed folks to learn to better defend themselves against an active shooter situation, and literally none of them will take me up on it.
Wow.
It's
okay, so for the listeners, an active shooter would be it would be a group of people, small, medium, or large group of people that suddenly have to deal with an active shooter, be a classroom of students, and there's a shooter that comes in. People wandering around a mall, shooter. These psycho shooters that we hear about shooting up schools and trains and whatever else.
Well, I mean, just happening not too far from you. You know what I mean? Oncor Community College.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And the last time I actually got to do it, I got to do it for a group of college seniors who were about to finish their education degrees and go be teachers in elementary and secondary schools in the state of Arizona. And I was grateful to get to teach them. And it's not hard. It's not difficult training. In fact, I just did it for a homeschool community, a homeschool theater group here in town. My wife and I were not militant, but enthusiastic homeschoolers for about 12 years. And I love doing that kind of training, not because I like to the fact that it's necessary. I mean, it's a shame that it's necessary, but it is, and it's not just necessary in America. The greatest mass atrocity in recent memory is in Norway. So, teaching people who are in non-permissive environments, I do follow the Houston FBI. If you were to look up your Google search, Houston run, hide, fight mentality. I think for untrained people, the run, hide, fight mentality makes a lot of sense. And that is if there's a problem, run away from it. If you get out of the way, an active shooter, generally speaking, can't hit anything more than 15 feet away from it. So run if you can possibly run. I've taught all my children who are in public schools that if there's a shooter and they can run, they'll get in trouble with the school, but they'll have dad in front of them and they'll never have any problems. Run home, run, jump the fence, don't stay in the kill zone. If you can't run, if there's no way for you to run, then hide. If the bad guy can't see you, if he doesn't know where you are, then he won't shoot you. And if you can't run and you can't hide, then you have to fight. If he comes
to
where
fight.
You are, you have to fight with everything you have and with any implements you've got, any improvised force multipliers or anything you have on your person, fight to the death. Because if he's going to murder you, you may as well make him pay for it.
I would imagine that an untrained individual would probably run out of instinct. A trained individual would probably duck and cover. And so this would actually, unfortunately for us out there that have done some training, it might take us some effort to unlearn the ducking and covering and go for the run, because
it depends.
You do, in order to run away, there is an element of exposing yourself versus, ducking down and taking cover. But if you're not mobile, if you're taking cover and the bad guy can walk up on you that way.
That's it. And, when you hear gunfire from one direction, running the other direction is wise. And I know some people, and I get some pushback on the page and on my website for that. you know, the people say, well, you know, gosh, John, you teach people to run, and I'd rather stand and fight. And I understand that. And listen, I think every person gets to make that determination for themselves.
Right.
That what size their flock is. You know, for some people, they'd protect anybody at any time, no matter the cost to them. But everybody gets to decide that for themselves. I tell folks all the time, my first and primary responsibility is to be a husband to my wife and a father to my children. And so they're going to be my first priority. My wife deserves to grow old with her husband. My children deserve to have their dad around when they have children. So it's an acceptable answer to me for even one who's trained in self-defense that when the bad guy shows up, it's not their responsibility to save the world. It's their responsibility to be safe and to protect themselves from danger.
As a default.
Yeah, for sure. And, I mean, listen, don't get me wrong, man. You know, we saw three men step up in a train in France and, you know, save however many lives, we'll never know, but certainly dozens, when a terrorist was going to attack. And I think that's laudable, and those men deserve all the accolades that they got and then some. You know, give those guys medals, and, I think that's fantastic. But not everybody can do that, and that's okay, too.
So now we're talking about somebody who's wielding a knife. Generally, it's 20 feet or greater. You know, someone can still lunge. Mm-hmm. The people think 20 feet is a long distance, but it's definitely not. You got someone with a knife, that's, you know, a short-range weapon, that's still 20 feet in. So, you might have conceal and carry, so at least you'd want to dash out, you know, get 30 feet away, and then maybe be able to, you know, stop the second or third victim from being stabbed if it's in a massacre-type scenario. And
I mean, obviously, if it's a massacre, they always get launched from ambush. Nobody announces all that's going on and gives notice. So, you know, especially in a mass shooter situation, you're not talking about, you know, saving everybody. That's probably an unrealistic goal, but it's keeping the count of deaths into the single digits rather than into the high double digits, and protecting life and protecting your own first. And, you know, the average police response time in a suburban environment now is somewhere approaching 5 minutes. And if you think I think that's a great response time. You think about how relatively few police officers there are, depending on, you know, compared to the size of the area they have to patrol. And 5 minutes isn't bad. But if you think that that's a short amount of time, just sit in a room and start a timer and wait for 5 minutes and think about the amount of carnage that happens in that time.
Absolutely.
An active shooter event.
Absolutely. The Aurora shooting, the Batman premiere shooting, that seems like that probably went down in about 5 minutes, the shooting.
Yeah.
I don't know too much about it, but it, based on the body count and what went down, it seems like if that lasted longer than 5 minutes, it seems like there'd be
more people would have died.
Yeah.
And
okay, so
really
back. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Well,
I was going to say back to the hand-to-hand stuff, before we go back to taking the pin out of the conceal and carry with a handgun, let's talk a little bit about the close-in combat and your 5Ds. Tell the audience all about the 5Ds.
So, you know, the 5Ds is something that we came up with not because we wanted something snazzy, but it's just principles that we see again and again and again. I mean, you were right earlier. I get videos sent to me. We're answering somewhere in the order of 80 to 100 messages a day on the Facebook page right now. And thank God I've got an admin team that helps me. But, I've probably watched, somewhere in the order of a couple of thousand muggings. And when we see somebody who is armed against somebody who is unarmed, When we see success, a successful self-defense, those 5Ds happen with ridiculous regularity. Sometimes there's skipping in there, but it almost always happens in that way. And I arrange them that way because just communicator's perspective, we like the 5Ds. And everybody likes to joke that I'm, you know, it's the 5Ds of dodgeball, right? Dodge, duck, get, dive, and dodge.
Isn't there, wasn't dodge two of them, though? Something like that?
Yeah, exactly. right. Not, you know, the first and the last one there. So,
right.
And really, you know, other arts have similar. I'm not saying that it's unique. I'm not saying that it is the only way to do things. But the 5Ds are my formulation, and I'm the only one that I know that has done them this way. And we say this, first of all, so the 5Ds are deflect, dominate, distract, disarm, disable. And we say when you use them in order, it really greatly increases the odds of you successfully defending yourself against somebody who already has a force multiplier pulled on you. You know, they say don't draw on a drawn gun because, you know, you can't respond fast enough to beat a trigger press. So the 5Ds are your better solution. So the first thing is to deflect, to keep whatever force multiplier he has from being able to bring to bear on you. So that might be, you know, pushing the barrel aside with a firearm or, you know, grabbing the knife hand or whatever. So getting yourself out of the line of direct attack so that the force multiplier that the bad guy has is not immediately deliverable. Then you got to dominate. You can't just deflect. If you do that, he'll get it back in the game really fast. So then you have to dominate. And we when we talk about dominate, we use that in a hierarchy. The worst thing to dominate is to dominate the force multiplier. So that is to hold the gun or to grab the stick, to grab the hand with the stick, or to grab the arm with the gun and dominate the entire arm. Better still to dominate the whole person and keep him from being able to reorient. So once they are dominated,
senses.
Absolutely, that's a great way to dominate. You know, you smack a guy in the face and it makes him close his eyes and he can't see. For a brief moment, you've dominated his consciousness. So that's dominating this whole person. Then we distract, and because we see again and again, when you get in a fight for the tool, whatever that tool is, it's a matter of strength and technique, who has the better. But the second that I get his mind on thinking something other than I've got to hold on to this gun, then the world changes. Now, that distract can take 1,000 different ways, but it's a principle. So that might be an eye poke, a groin kick. That might be a strike to the side. That might be bumping him up against, you know, some shelving behind him. Whatever it takes to get his attention off of whatever you're doing, then you've distracted him. Now that gives you the ability to disarm, to take the force multiplier away from him using the principles of physics. So once you've gotten the firearm away from him, then we say disable. Keep him from being able to attack you anymore, whatever that is. Now, I don't mean by disable, I don't mean permanently injure or kill, because the situation is dependent. Now, he might be, I mean, if he's threatening you with deadly harm, you might be able to and right to use deadly harm to protect yourself. But whatever it is, to keep him from being able to further attack you is the end game, and you took the fire away from him to do that. So you might see some other arts. You know, Krav Maga likes to do RCAT, redirect, control, attack, and take away. I like to add that last one, that disable, because it says, no, when this fight is over, I want it to be over, and I don't want him to be able to hurt me again. So we use the 5Ds as an organizing principle that whenever – so, for instance, tomorrow night at Attitude First, I'm going to be teaching Real Encounters. We're going to use that motorcyclist video, the two guys, you know. We're going to work on that. We're going to work on how does the 5Ds work best here, especially if you've watched that video. The bad guy was definitely using a leveraging arm there to keep – his firearm at base. You've got to be able to deal with that as
right.
well.
Right. He had his firearm in his right hand back down and away, and his leveraging arm out in front of him.
Guarding and protecting. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And the other lesson in that video, of course, is the lady that opens the door and closes it real quick.
Yeah, she opens it up and is like, nope, I'm done. I'm out of here.
I mean, there's a lesson in that, too. Quick situational awareness and get out of the scene.
Absolutely. Very, very wise. So we love to use the 5Ds. I mean, I think they're a useful tool. I think they help a lot of people. And one of the things that's most fun to me on ASPIS, having done this now for a while, is we do have a very active community, a very passionate community, a professional one. But hearing other people pick up the terminology and the principles and the application of those principles and hearing others talk about the 5Ds is really gratifying.
I'm sure. I'm sure of it. Force multipliers too. I've heard that used out in the field a lot too. And I didn't know if it came from you or not, but you're certainly the first person.
No, I don't know where it came from, but it wasn't from me for sure.
I'll tell you what. It sounds military, sounds tactical, and sounds cool. I like it a lot.
Yeah. Okay, well, I try not to be tactical. I try not to be that guy, but sometimes technical lingo helps us because it lets us communicate complicated information quickly and succinctly. So, I mean, I use it. I try not to be that guy. You know, I don't want to be an operator operating operationally in an operation. I was in the military, but I was not a door kicker. You know, I made hot water the hard way in the Navy for 8 years. And
Nuclear technician?
Yeah, I was a reactor operator.
Right.
It sounds really impressive until you actually do it, and then it really is what Homer Simpson said it is in The Simpsons.
You said make hot water the hard way. So that's
yeah,
I
we split atoms. It's the hard way to do it, but you know when you can figure it out, it works. So
right.
So I'm not, you know, I wasn't a door kicker. I didn't do any tours in theater. None of that stuff.
Well, tactical terminology and, you know, the whole textbook type lingo probably comes in pretty handy when you get training sessions with, you know, law enforcement or security, yeah. You know, teams or whatever, because that's the language they speak.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, any community has its unique language. Like I said, when I was a nuke in the Navy, we had a very particular lingo because, you know, it's a technical, thing that we do. You know, I'm a pastor, and in fact, pastors have their own technical lingity that they, you know, we talk about. So every community has it, and the self-defense community has it as well. But I do think that we want to maintain a very special sensitivity to people who are new, especially because the firearms and self-defense industry is growing so fast. So we don't want to be so technical, include those who are new to the concepts of self-defense. And we want to use the technical lingo responsibly and effectively. Some people like to use it just to sound cool or just to feel like they're part of the in crowd.
Guilty again.
Then use it. But, you know, some of that stuff just drives me nuts. You know, when somebody talks about, well, you know, I love the AR platform. The AR is not a freaking platform, okay? A tank is a platform. A boat is a platform. The AR is a rifle. It's a pattern of rifle, but it's a rifle. It's a firearm. I don't like. I got beat by my NRA training counselor back in the day not to use the W word, so I don't like to call things weapons. I'm the weapon. All else is just tools. It's sometimes that lingo kind of drives me nuts. That
sure.
That's like talking
well,
about
and operating. If some of those blue haired old ladies that you were trying to keep your self-defense and stuff away from, if they ever come around, you know, I'm sure that a few of them have come up to you and asked you for some help or whatever, and you probably wouldn't get very far using that textbook lingo with them.
Well, and I mean, it's the same thing. I tell people all the time, I, and listen, I'm not a high-level guy. I'm not Travis Haley in terms of my gun skills or whatever. I know where I'm at. I'm a good shooter, and I'm more than that, a great teacher. I try to teach well, and that sounded arrogant. Please forgive me for that.
I've got a lot of training and
a lot of background in teaching. I love new shooters. I would rather teach a new shooter than somebody that's been shooting a long time because new shooters tend to have fewer hang-ups with learning. And when somebody comes to me, I just did this a couple weeks ago with some friends, and you know, taking whether a man or a woman who has never fired a gun before and stepping them through, I start them usually on airsoft. And, you know, we teach them the fundamentals of firearm safety and, you know, the gun parts and nomenclature and all that stuff. And then, you know, marksmanship and target, you know, sight alignment, sight picture and trigger control and, you know, the principles of a good firing position. And we get them out there with an airsoft gun that goes blop, blop, blop. And they, you know, has almost no recoil and no sound, and they're able to put shots on target. Great. Then I put a little 22 revolver in their hand that I have a Ruger Super Single 6 for the gun folk out there that, you know, you put a 22 long rifle cylinder in and let them shoot some rounds, and it has very little recoil, very little noise, and they have success with it. And then you move from there to I have a K-Frame 357 Magnum revolver, but I put light-loaded 38s in it where they can really shoot it and it doesn't hurt them any. And by the end of the day, I've had women who are scared of guns shooting a full-power, bare-load 300-grain 44 Magnum.
Wow.
And excited about it because you step them through the process and then they're never scared of guns in their life again. And maintaining that kind of accessibility to people is important to me as well.
It is. It is. Yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, and kids too. Kids are the same thing. I mean, they're, you know, any inexperienced shooter.
Sure.
The more you do it, the less. And there is some things to be afraid of. I mean, any slide action pistol can hurt you if you're not gripping it right. And sure. You know, there's lots of that.
Yeah, but you know, I've got pictures. I got video of my son. My son's 16 now. And I got a video of him at 12 years old shooting a lever action 45-70 like it's nothing. Because
wow.
He knew how to shoot. And, you know, I mean, he's 16 now and he's an NRA apprentice instructor. Great. My 13-year-old daughter, brief story, she was on a women's retreat with my wife with our church a couple of months ago and they were up in the woods and you know, she sees a squirrel up on a tree branch 50 yards away from my wife and she was like, oh, look at that squirrel. I bet you I could shoot that squirrel from here if I had a gun. So, you know, kids love to learn it, and boys and girls both. My 10-year-old daughter has a rifle that she absolutely adores and can shoot like a, you know, an absolute champ. So,
you know, hitting targets
you
is great.
Them in.
Yeah. It's great fun.
Oh, and she hunts. Yeah. She hunts, so.
Mm-hmm. And basically, you can take any like a golfer, they're shooting targets. The same type of satisfaction that you get from getting that close to the hole, you get with getting that close to your, you know, the rest of your grouping. It's all good fun. That's for sure. It's a little more expensive, depending on what round you're shooting.
Golf is money.
It is, right? Golf is the most money I've ever spent to get angry. I can vouch for that.
Yeah. Yeah, we call it golf because all the other four-letter words were taken.
Right. Let's compare. Let's get some facts going here.
Okay.
Let's talk about the devastation difference on tissue between a rifle and a pistol.
Vast differences. You know, we talk about you know, handguns in reality suck at killing people. We carry them because they're concealable and they're portable. But a handgun bullet, regardless of caliber, 9.40, 45, 357 even out of a pistol-length barrel, you know, you're talking anywhere from 300 to 500 foot-pounds of energy. So, I mean, don't get me wrong. Nobody wants to get shot with one. But the statistics simply say that 80% of people shot with a handgun live. They survive the encounter. Now, they may be incapacitated, but they live. The weakest rifle rounds, I mean, if we get beyond 22 long rifle, you know, the 223 or the 5.56 millimeter is really the smallest rifle caliber that's in wide use. And that rifle caliber, you're talking 1,200 foot-pounds of energy minimum, and then it moves up from there. You know, you get up into the 308, you know, 30-06, you're up over 2,000 foot-pounds of energy. So, I mean, they're a vastly different world. 80% of people shot with a long gun die. So they're for different use. But there's a reason that big game hunters don't use pistols to try to take down elk.
So,
there's a reason, you know, that they don't go to war with pistols. There's a reason that soldiers don't go to war with pistols. Most of the soldiers that I know, I got a buddy who trains with me at Attitude First. And he is an Army Ranger. You know, he was in the Ranger Regiment, did tour as a Ranger, did another tour in Afghanistan as an infantryman. And I asked him how many handgun rounds he actually used while he was over in theater, and he said zero. They don't use handguns over there because, you know, they are in a known threat environment, so they use rifles. Why? Because they're far, far, far more effective because they do a whole lot more damage to tissue when shot at them simply because of the greatly increased velocity. I mean, a 9-millimeter projectile coming out of a 4-inch barrel, I mean, I'm spitballing here, but you're in the neighborhood of 1,200 feet per second. You know, you shoot a 223 out of a 16-inch barrel, and you're talking more like 3,000 feet per second. So the vast difference in velocity does a vast difference in tissue damage when it hits a human being, which is why a rifle is definitely, you know, the choice. I don't know if you've ever heard of, you know, Sergeant Joe Frick's rules for a gunfight, but the rule number one of a gunfight is have a gun, bring a gun, and bring all the friends that you have that have guns, preferably long guns. So, you know, obviously, if you have a choice, the long gun is the way to go. But we don't carry long guns everywhere we go. I know some people do. I don't want to get into that whole thing with open carry of rifles. But, you know, we don't carry those generally because they're a pain in the butt to maintain muzzle discipline, to not,
well, yeah,
you know,
I mean,
muzzle everybody around. It's just too much.
It's kind of silly to go about daily life for normal people with, you know, strapped with a rifle. It's just not, you know, not, at least not in 2015 America.
Yeah,
there's places
in
the world
Syria,
where you might walk around that might be normal.
Darn
you
right.
Know, but, you know, and 2016, 2017 America, we never know. I mean, there's probably going to be some neighborhoods that might be a normal thing, which isn't that bad. You know, I mean, I could see if gun culture becomes more commonplace, I could see, you know, some of these neighborhood watch types or whatever, you know, be strapped in certain inner city type scenarios or whatever. Or when there needs, you know, for the symbolic nature, like a lot of the three percenters and oath keepers after that last mass shooting or the shooting spree on the recruiting centers, there was a vast outpouring of people open carrying rifles in front of these recruiting centers, civilians. But they, you know, that was symbolic. It was a trend. It came and went. You know, I mean, they're not doing it now. But and so in that kind of situation, it was temporary, and it was cool in a way. A lot of people poo-pooed it, but they, I don't think those people understood that it was also symbolic.
I think you're right, and I also think, listen, I'm a Second Amendment absolutist. I think that it was put into place in the Bill of Rights to, as its fundamental core, to protect the people against tyranny. And I think that every American is a member of the unorganized militia and needs to be ready to muster up in defense of hearth and home and city and state within 72 hours with a current battle load. And I don't think most of us are. I know I am, but I know most of us aren't. And I wish more people were. But just because I'm ready to muster up for militia duty if I have to, doesn't mean I carry that around in my daily life when it's not.
Right. And each one of us have local laws we have to abide by too, as far as rifles and how to carry them and all that. It's not like concealing
it.
Yeah, Arizona's great as far as guns, right?
It's the we get the best scores in the union from the Brady Foundation every year. We almost got a negative score this last year.
Almost
got a negative score. We have consistently scored zero from the Brady campaign for quite some time. It's, you know, constitutional carry. Open carry is legal and accepted here as well. You don't need a permission slip from the government to carry a firearm. If you're legal to own it, you're legal to carry it. You can open carry a handgun at 18 years old. Concealed carry is 21, and very few gun-free zones, and it's great. And I have only met, and I've lived in Arizona for 13 years. I have only met one police officer in the wild who was not a very strong Second Amendment supporter. It's a great place to live. The weather's fantastic. Only come and move here if you're conservative and you're gun folk, please.
We got a couple of heroes among the Patriot community that are right there in Arizona. That's a whole other discussion, though. I think that I like the idea of open carry as far as pistols go. I think it's awkward, and it seems kind of silly when you see it if it doesn't seem appropriate. I'm not talking about concealed carry. I'm talking about open carry. But on the other hand, if I could flip a switch on the wall and all of a sudden make it culturally acceptable that people had open carry, and like every, you know, third or fourth person you saw on the streets was open carrying, I would like that community.
You know, here in, I live in Phoenix, I live in the burbs, and, you know, it's not common here, but when you see somebody open carrying, nobody makes a fuss, and you're way more likely to see somebody talk to that person about what gun they have on their hip or what holster they're using than you are to see anybody having any problems. You know, police don't give anybody a hard time here. It's normalized in Arizona. So I have open carry here in the past. Usually that's for range days or whatever.
Sure.
You know, if I'm teaching.
For utility purposes.
Generally, yeah, if I'm going to take the class, I try to carry in whatever condition that I'm going to carry in my real life. So that for me is concealed. But, you know, every time I've open carried here, every once in a while I'll do that because I don't, you know, for whatever reason, I don't feel like putting on cover garments or whatever. Or I'm doing something. I've never had a negative interaction with that. So it really does depend. I mean, of course, if you lived in a place like New York State or Massachusetts or, you know, the San Francisco Bay Area of California or something, it's a whole different kettle of fish because of the
culture. Yeah. It would be nice. I prefer the thigh holsters down lower. Mm-hmm. And that definitely looks wrong, and it's not acceptable in society yet. So I conceal and carry.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. It's just, you know, even if I up on the belt, even if I was out of the pant up on the belt, concealed carry, well, most of my clothes, just based off of, you know, my personal, for lack of a better expression, fashion, but the clothes I wear mm-hmm. would conceal it anyways if it's hooked to my belt anywhere, because usually I have an untucked shirt on or I'm wearing a jacket or whatever, which is and by the way, I want to let everyone know that I'm definitely an advocate of having to have a license to conceal. I think that if somebody's going to come walking up on me and they have a concealed weapon, if they have a legal concealed weapon, I would prefer that they have, you know, that they're safe with it. Otherwise, I would like to know if somebody's carrying, if they're like, in other words, I'm an advocate of being able to open carry without any form of license at all. But I want, you know, you could be a doofus that's untrained, that's got, you know, that's got an open carry going on. I want to see that, you know, I just want that early warning that I might have, you know, somebody that's a doofus and, you know, going to shoot their own foot and my foot, maybe if we're standing on line at the bank or whatever. And, versus,
you know,
you know, having
to think about there that when we went to constitutional carry in Arizona, so that anybody can carry, I mean, at 21 years old, if you're legal to own, so if you're not a prohibited possessor, you can carry, you know? And a lot of people really were, hey, man, there's going to be blood on the highways and there's going to be, you know, shootings every day and there's going to be problems left and right. And then the law went into effect and it's just crickets. We haven't had any problems at all.
Yeah, exact opposite.
And in fact, as a trainer, more people, in fact, when we get to constitutional carry, the Arizona Department of Public Services cut their number of people in the concealed carry permitting unit because they thought, well, we have concealed carry constitutionally now, we won't need it. Well, they've actually had more permit requests since constitutional carry went into effect than before.
For sure.
As a trainer, I hear people all the time now, man, listen, I don't have to get trained by the government, but I need training because I know it. So, you know, it hasn't been a problem here. So I hear the caution and I recognize it, but, you know, I really think it's a solution looking for a problem. And
well, what you have there is you have a mechanism of the development of laws, and so basically this is how it works. Is in this situation you've got discussions before a law, before you even have a control group to look at, you have discussions, and in those discussions you can only talk about all the what ifs. And unfortunately, you have to have those discussions before the laws go into effect. And so that's what causes this snail's pace development in the laws, is that we've got all the paranoia happening and all these what ifs in the parts of the discussion that happens before the laws are created. Then, well, what we've got here, like you mentioned, is after laws are created, we've got a control group to go look at and look at the stuff that happened, how it really works out. And it is amazing. There was a prime example of this, at least as far as this audience is concerned, is we had that DC event on 10/10 this year with all of the African Americans going into Washington, D.C. And then there was lots of counter protesting going on. And man, the horror stories and what ifs that happened leading up to that event this year. I've heard everything from certain people, you know, the people that were going to go in and protect the American flag because Louis Farrakhan was going to take down all the flags. So there was a group that was going to go into D.C. amongst tens of thousands of people that they thought might tear them from limb to limb. And so there was all these horror stories and what ifs. And as it turned out, actually there was no incidences to report of. And so when it's just really tough when you're talking about something that has to do with violence and the what ifs compared to something after the laws are developed. Of course, you can always look at Chicago as a prime example of the negative effects of gun control, because of course we all know that they have the highest gun control and the highest amount of violent crimes with guns being used. So
yeah, I mean, and obviously it's gotten better for them. Thankfully, they at least got shall issue concealed carry in the last year or so. And so
yeah,
it's getting better for the good people of Chicago. They can actually, you know, the politicians of Chicago can't keep the good people from carrying. They've never been able to keep the bad people from carrying. So I'm grateful for that, and I hope to see a decline in violent crime there in the next several years. But, I mean, you know, cultural change is going to take some time for sure.
For sure. So the reason why I wanted to talk to you about the rifle devastation versus handgun devastation was because I wanted to go back to handguns and talk about two different things. One in particular is that what I have noticed is, and I've heard you speak on, is not necessarily expecting that first round to put your target down. And so, and of course, the gross epitome of that is the which we'll say for in a minute, is shoot them in the leg. But let's talk about, let's talk about, you know, basically firing until the capacity to commit violence against you is gone. Obviously, you're going to shoot more than one bullet with a handgun. Statistically,
well,
you should.
You know,
what can you say on that?
Almost always, what happens to non very experienced war fighters, you know, sometimes if you've got somebody who's been in a combat zone quite a bit, or an officer who's really been in a lot of fights and a lot of deadly force encounters, they may be able to combat that. But for most people, you know, I'm not a cop. I'm not a door kicker. You know, I'm not 11 Bravo in the Army or whatever. For most of us, if a deadly force encounter happens, you're going to pull the trigger multiple times, because what's going to happen is that you pull the trigger, and even somebody who's shot, unless you put a bullet in their central nervous system, you know, in their cranial cavity or through their spinal column, it's not going to drop them immediately. It's just not. That's just not reality. I mean, go watch any of the shootings on our Facebook page or our website, and you'll just see again and again and again that first shot doesn't put them down. So you can see people fire multiple rounds, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 rounds. And we do that because we have a mantra, and it's not just an effect mantra, but also legal and moral self-defense, that you shoot until the threat is over. You keep putting rounds in your intended target until they're no longer a deadly threat. And the second they're no longer a deadly threat, you stop. But that first round is probably not going to do it. The methods of stopping somebody from a handgun bullet in particular, there are only three. The first one is psychological. You shoot somebody and it hurts bad enough, or they decide they don't want to fight you anymore. They put their hands up and surrender. And that's legitimate. The second one, technical term is exsanguination, but it's bleeding out. And you got about 11 liters of blood in your body, and you got to lose half of it in order to be incapacitated. So that takes some time, 30 seconds or more for most injuries. And the third one is central nervous system incapacitation. So, you know, if you put one into someone's brain case, generally speaking, they're done. Although there have been plenty of instances of people shot in the head who still continue to fight because the bullet didn't do it in there. So, you know, you always want to be aware. I mean, always, every time we recognize that we're responsible for every bullet that leaves the muzzle of the gun. So you always watch out for bystanders whenever you fire needlessly or aimlessly. But, you know, you put shots on target as fast as you can put them reliably on target until the threat is no longer a threat. And that could take one shot. It could take six shots. And there's absolutely no way to know that before the shooting starts.
Yeah, exactly. The leg shot. You got the femoral artery going through your leg, and you know, the chances are, you know, if you're using a hollow point or whatever, that you're going to get close to that, gravity is going to work with the blood bleeding out in a leg shot, and so you know, I can understand. Go ahead.
It'll work, but you know, you got to be cautious. If you actually went on our Facebook page right now, the video pinned to the top of the page is a video from Iran, and it's a police officer, a group of them, trying to stop an armed robber, a bank robber who had a knife, and it's a big mess, and it's certainly not up to American law enforcement standards, and there's all kinds of stuff. But in the middle of it, the officer shoots the bad guy in his leg with his pistol, and it teaches us some important lessons because, number one, there's two reasons people say shoot him in the leg. Number one, they say, well, you want to shoot him in the leg to stop it, right? Because that'll stop him. Well, I think that video shows very clearly it didn't stop him. The guy was not incapacitated for another 30 seconds after he was shot. And if he's a deadly threat, 30 seconds around a deadly threat is way too long. So it didn't incapacitate him quickly enough, whereas a couple of shots in the center of mass might have. Secondly, people say, well, shoot him in the leg because it won't kill him, right? Whereas shooting him in the center mass will. Well, that guy, when he finally was incapacitated 30 seconds later, 10 seconds after that, he was completely out and on his way to bleeding out and dying.
Yeah,
shot
through the artery.
Ridiculous amount of blood. Yeah,
when I watched that video, and I was wondering, you know, seemed to be broad daylight in the middle of middle of a city. And, you know, I speculated in my mind that perhaps maybe there was people standing behind.
Certainly.
And that might have influenced the cop's decision to shoot low or shoot not shoot low, but shoot in a downward trajectory to, you know, because there could have been people that, you know,
well,
in the background.
Well, I recognize, though, that if you have to shoot take a force-on-force class, you know, take a class where somebody else has a UTM gun or some munitions or airsoft, and they're shooting back at you. And, man, hitting them in the leg reliably, hitting them in something as small as the upper leg is ridiculously difficult in a live environment. Whereas, you know, shooting for the center mass, I always say shoot them in the meaty bits. You know, whatever meaty bits present themselves, shoot them if you have to shoot them. And that is a much bigger target. The biggest target that you can get to in a moment of stress is a target that you want to aim at, because it's the one you're most likely to hit. And actually hitting someone in the leg in that moment of incredible life or death stress is, I mean, it's really, really hard. And anybody who's actually been in that situation or even trained in a force-on-force situation could tell you that. So to me, there's three good reasons that shoot them in the leg. It just is the mantra of the uninformed, quite frankly.
Right. And the misguided also.
Yeah,
definitely. And that's the thing is, you know, if you're in a situation where you have to, you know, you have to turn towards a justifiable homicide, you know, that's, you know, there's a qualifier for homicide, and that is a death. And, you know, you might hope the best for the person that you need to use that force on, because there are people that think that way. But frankly, you know, if I'm depressing a trigger, then my intention is not, you know, is to stop the violence from, you know, coming towards me, my family, my loved ones, my friends, whatever got me in that scenario in the first place. If you happen to survive as my target, then that's fine and dandy for you, but it's not necessarily a factor in my choice.
No, to me, it's not either. I mean, listen, I'm a Christian and I pastor a church here in the Phoenix area. And I'm an evangelical, but I tell people all the time, look, you know, I shoot to stop the threat if I ever have to shoot. And in my opinion, that person has made their bargain with God. And that's between them and God, not them and me. And so I'm going to stop that threat. If they die, that's not my responsibility. That was their responsibility. They had the right to stop their attack whenever they wanted. Had they stopped it sooner, then they wouldn't have paid that price. But they're the one who's responsible for their death, not me. If they live afterwards, as long as the threat is stopped, I don't care whether they live or die.
Yeah,
fine.
Exactly.
If they live, then they're the government's problem, and they'll haul them off to the hospital and then, you know, to prison, and I'll testify against them and press charges. But my goal is always to stop the threat to me or my family. That's what I want to do. And once the threat is stopped, let it stop. And because otherwise, you know, if you go beyond that, then you put yourself at risk, you cross the line of innocence to becoming the aggressor, and then you could, in continuing the fight, be hurt. You could then go to prison. And if you go to prison after winning a gunfight, that's a loss. You didn't win. You go to prison, and your family is without you, and your career
right,
is over.
Exactly.
And you didn't win, so make sure you stop at the right time.
It would be nice if body cams were worn by everyone, and
yeah,
you know there were cameras on every corner, and that we're getting there.
Terrible.
Yeah, we're getting there, and so that is cool. Mm-hmm. All right, we're at that time of the show. We've shot the baloney for an hour, and I'm sure that you want to get off to bed here sometime soon. So let's go ahead and open up the lines and see if anybody has any questions. We'll take a couple calls. Let's see. If you want to ask John a question, just dial 845-277-9220. And when you come onto the queue, press number 1, and we'll know that you want to come on the air. And I do ask that that you keep it clean. John's a pastor, and I want him to be able to share this show with his friends and his contacts out there. So let's keep the F-bombs. Like, basically, don't make me edit this in post. I don't want to, so just keep it clean. Yep, we got one caller already at area code 850. You're on the air. Who's this?
Hey, guys. It's Sally.
Hey, Sally. How you doing?
Hi. Awesome. I've been listening to this whole conversation. I love him. I want some information.
Sure, Sally.
Like,
how can
contact numbers. Hi. I'm interested in the training that you offer. And you're in Phoenix area?
Yeah, absolutely. We're in the Phoenix area. So, if you're in the Phoenix area as well, you can always find on the if you're on Facebook and you go to the Active Self-Protection page, then on the events tab, we list all of the upcoming classes.
Wait, I apologize. The name of the page?
So it's Active Self-Protection.
Okay, hold up. I'm writing.
And if you go on the Facebook page, you just search, or it's facebook.com/activeselfprotection. There's an events tab, and you can go on the events tab and find events in your area. You can also subscribe to the events, and then that way, if anything shows up in your area, it will actually it'll give you a notification on your Facebook for that, which is a nice tool. Although you're going to have to forgive me because tomorrow night's class is not listed there because I got a little buried with the outreach and search for Halloween.
That's okay. That kind of happened.
If you go into the previous events, there's a couple of them there at Attitude First Martial Arts Academy. You can join us there twice a month. We do them first Tuesday and fourth Thursday of the month. This Friday and Saturday, if anybody's in the Dallas area, I'll be in Dallas at Defensive Mindset and be doing a weekend of training there Friday night and Saturday during the day. I travel. We're going to be doing – I can't quite announce all the details of them. We're going to do a couple of big, big events in January in Las Vegas right before SHOT Show. And I travel all over the country. So, if you're in a part of the country that you want me to come and train and you don't have great training in your area, if we can make everything work and keep my wife happy with, making it worth the time to get out there, I'm happy to do it.
That's great.
Awesome.
And if you're,
I love it.
And
when
you're
searching
Phoenix,
on Facebook, when you're searching for active self-protection, there's a space between self and protection. Three words.
Yeah, all three words. It's three words. Unless if you just type in the URL, there's no spaces. If you just type in Facebook, all one word there, it'll go right to the page. Or if you just go to the search bar on Facebook and type in the three words with spaces, active self-protection, it'll show up.
And perfect.
And find
I
it
love
there
it.
And
what site
come
is
and train.
So, to pardon?
What was that?
What side of Phoenix are you on?
So,
where do you mostly conduct your classes?
Attitude First is up in the North Central Phoenix area. Basically, right now, it's it's about to move, but it's fairly close. I-17 in the 101 is where Attitude First is, and that's where we do our empty-handed classes. We're just about – Attitude First is just moving into a new facility. Hopefully we'll be done moving on the 1st of December. Don't quote me on that. It's brand new. And when we do that, we're going to have so much more space. That's basically the same place, same general area, I-17 and the 101 in North Phoenix. And we're going to have the ability to do force-on-force classes there. We're going to have the ability to do map-based classes there at almost any time of the week. It's going to be fantastic. I can't wait. So that'll be in the next month or so.
I'm super excited. I'm going to go get off this phone and go pull it up on Facebook and see what I can find.
Awesome.
Thanks, Sally.
Look forward to meeting you.
Thanks. Bye, y'all.
All right, bye. There she goes.
There she goes.
All right, let's see. That area code 337 and 210, I didn't see if your hand went up and back down. If you want to come on the air, just go ahead and press 1 again, area code 337 and area code 210. Other than that, what's next for you, John? Where are you? What's next for your growth plan?
Well, you know, so we've got a couple of things that are coming. I'll stick my foot out there. The self-defense videos have been, it's something that nobody else does, frankly. And we have right now that I know of, we have 3 police academies using them every day. We have the military police on Camp Lejeune use them every day as part of their daily training. I know a bunch of police departments that use them at roll call. Michigan's police officers standards and training, they use them as part of their yearly continuing education for officers. So the next phase for me is we're almost ready, and I keep saying that, but please, Lord Jesus, may it be now that we are actually ready to launch our instructor development portal. And what that's going to be is going to be a resource for instructors and teachers who are teaching self-defense and firearms to use the videos with permission and with rights to network together. We'll list them on the website so that when people are, you know, so that last caller was like, hey, I'm here in Phoenix. Well, that's great. Come train with me. But what if you live in Kalamazoo? I'm not there. And I can't be there all the time to help you. So that will lead then from, instructors in the area to perhaps even a certified instructor program. Like I say, I'm not, I may not be the expert in everything, but I know how to teach and I know how to help people transfer knowledge. So that'll come up next. We've also started working on the next iteration of an environment for students who aren't in our area to come and train with us via online training, which there's some things you just have to learn face-to-face, but a lot of the concepts you can't. We can deliver online, so we're working on those, some kind of a student learning environment as well. So those are coming in the next couple of months. There's some technological hurdles there that are kind of bigger than I thought they were, but those are the next phases. And believe it or not, I talk about it faster at church, and ASP, as big as it is not my full-time occupation right now. But the goal is that early in 2016 it is. And so then that way we can just continue putting out stuff that really helps people. And that's the goal, to then start packaging those to say, okay, so here's how a knife fight really happens. Here's how a gunfight really goes down. Here's all the variables that you need to think about and look at, so that we see real-life things. So the instructor portal and then the student learning environment are the next 2 things that are on the agenda to add to help people more.
I suppose I would be doing my job if I didn't ask you about your church and your your flock that you pastor and, all that. How long have you been doing that?
It's a regular group of folks. I mean, I've been pastoring for about 11 years. I've been a Christian for about 17. I didn't grow up in the church. I didn't grow up in a Christian environment at all. We worshiped the San Francisco 49ers when I was a kid because Joe Montana was a quarterback. And, that's in the glory days. I've been doing that for about 11 years now. I try real hard. I mean, I'm sure you'll appreciate. It's a regular church family, good people. It's a really unique environment. I'm really grateful to be there. I've been at the church that I'm at now for about 8.5 years. So not everybody in my church family are gun folk. Not all of them are sheepdogs or you know, however you want to put that. They're just regular folk.
Sure.
So, I mean, they all know. There's no hiding the fact that I own ASP. There's no hiding the fact that, you know, when I show up at church on Sunday morning, I'm carrying a concealed firearm, and anybody that's been around the church knows that. I don't make any bones about that. But it's not the center of things. You know, it's not a gun church. It's
right. Yeah.
You know,
yeah. Okay.
Church where we try to live out what Jesus said and my life's work, to learn to live my life like Jesus would live my life if he was me, and to help other people do the same. So that's really where the heart of ASP is, actually, is just to help people. I think that people are the most valuable thing on earth. We're uniquely made in the image of God and are of inestimable value and inestimable worth. So that's worth protecting. You only protect what's valuable. So it's great stuff. It's very meaningful and valuable. I love doing it. I got out of the Navy in 02. I was in a car wreck is what happened. I was injured by a drunk driver. I'm allergic to drunk drivers. When everyone hits me with their car, I break out and herniated discs in my back. It was one of the best things that ever happened to me in reality. But two surgeries later, you know, the government said thank you for your interest in national defense, and don't let the door hit you where the Lord split you, you know.
Right.
I've been from there. I went to graduate school and worked in retail actually for about 5 years while I was doing that. And it's my passion. It's my life. I love that. And ASP actually grew out of that passion for me to help people and for me to encourage folks. And honestly, I think most people on our Facebook page and in our community on our website are appreciative of that. There are some folks. I'm respectful of all people. You know, we got folks on the page who are just about every kind of religion you can imagine, atheists and agnostics and, you know, Christians and everything in between, and you know, folks who I don't have any particular personal hate for any religious group as long as you can be respectful. You know, my rules in my community are that we're respectful of one another, and people recognize that I'm a man of faith and I'm a Christian man, and so my message and my worldview is going to come from that. And to expect,
I like
to
how you keep your page troll free too. You don't let people troll in there, and that and I work the same thing on my groups too, because let's face it, you know, especially with a purpose driven page like yours. You know, it's so easy to be distracted with drama, and so it's better just to, you know, just to let people know you're not going
to
put up with it.
Learn to be more respectful online, you know, to learn to be professional. You know, that keyboard distance makes people rude as all get out. And I just tell folks, my rule is act like a professional. If you wouldn't talk like that at a meeting at work, if you wouldn't talk like that to a client you don't know, if you wouldn't talk like that to your grandmother, don't bring that. You know, and
totally.
You know, we warn and we, you know, we work with people, but we don't mind banning trolls. If you're going to troll, then I don't want you. You know, go somewhere else and spread that crap. And,
I would imagine
you're
fans of your page don't want them either.
No, and you know, we banned a relative few. I think if I remember correctly, for October, I think we banned a total of 42 people off the page, and we were 176,500. Banning 42 people is a ridiculously small number.
Yeah, it's a pretty good good rate.
Yeah, but we normally, I mean, you know, we've told people before, I don't mind disagreement. I don't mind people seeing things differently than I do. That's no big deal. I mean, I don't know the way. I know a way, and I have my stuff for a reason. But, you know, disagreement is fine, but trolling is not. And I wish more people would kind of, you know, embrace that. But unfortunately, the internet is full of trolls. And, you know, our rule number one is don't feed the trolls. I have an excellent admin team. And I just, you know, if you wouldn't mind, I mean, I give a shout out to my admin team. I got about,
please do,
about 18 people who are men and women who are dedicated to the cause. They do it for the love of the game. Some fantastic folks. And they're waiting in there. This last month, we moderated 50,000 comments. And, you know, they're in there working with people. And so if ever you're on our page, you might see some initials after a comment. If you see initials after a comment with Active Self-Protection, that's one of our admins. Generally, I just comment without initializing because, I don't know, I'm lazy. But, you know, incredible people. And without them, the business doesn't happen. And and all the good things don't happen. I have, you know, a couple of mods in particular who keep the inbox clear for me and help me to love on folks and who moderate comments and get in there every day. So it takes a big team effort, and it's I get to be the face of the franchise, but it's them who make it work.
I couldn't imagine. I could not imagine adminning 200,000 people. I just can't.
You know, most people are pretty good about it, and we do keep the language filter on so that you know, some of the things you can custom set words you don't like and that you don't want, and so then it auto hides, and so a lot of that's there. You know, we just have to kind of make sure, and we steer direction, we'll steer comments, and you know, interact with people, because a lot of people will have great questions, and or sometimes, God bless them, people will give terrible advice, and that's a bad advice. You know, don't, you know, I wouldn't take that, and so. It takes a team effort, you know, and it's not just me. It would be overwhelming. I already spend a ridiculous amount of time doing that, but, you know, some of my admins, and I don't want to name names because, number one, they try to maintain their own personal, you know, privacy, but number two, I'll forget somebody and hurt feelings. But, you know, it's a ton of fun. So it's a great thing to do, if you'd have told me 3 years ago that I would be here, you know, primarily helping people in self-defense, that 6 million people a month would be listening to me about self-defense, I would have laughed in your face.
Has it grown organically, as they say?
Oh, yeah. I have never paid for a fan. I won't pay for a fan. That to me is not only is it ridiculous because it's counterintuitive, you know, it's counterproductive, but believe it or not, if you understand the way that Facebook works, buying fans works against you. It actually hurts you. So, no, we've never paid for a fan, never will. It's, you know, I think that the reality is in whatever industry you are, whether you're in self-defense or if you're into prepping or if you are, you know, you're into basket weaving, if you make compelling content and if you genuinely help people with something they need help with every day, then fans will come and people will do that. And I think people come around and ask because that's our general hope. Our hope is to help people. We're not trying, and don't get me wrong, it's a business, okay? It's a business. I train people. I recommend products to people because, you know, it's a business and we sell products and services. And so I don't begrudge that, and I'm not saying it's altruistic, but we genuinely want to help people. And I think if you do that, then people come.
Well, your videos alone help people. They help people that you can't reach otherwise. They help people at 4 in the morning when they're looking at their feeds, at 1 in the afternoon when they've got a break and they're looking at their feeds. All of your content on Facebook is 100% compelling, and I can't say that I've ever experienced any of your posts to be anything but informative, compelling, and a good read. And you're quick and to the point too, so it's just perfect, man.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, and I'm sure that you hear that mushy stuff all the time, but I'm telling you, it's the truth. Hell, even my baby's mama digs your page, and she's one of your 176,000.
Nice.
I'm responsible for about five, I think. Five.
Hey, man, 100. That's great.
I got a bunch of different Facebook identities, you know. Okay, last question. YouTube, what's up with that? Is that just kind of going the way of the dodo, or are you still uploading videos on YouTube? Or tell us about that.
You know, I do have a YouTube channel, and we do post occasional content on YouTube. But, you know, first of all, okay, so from a purely business perspective, YouTube doesn't make any sense to me. And the reason that it doesn't is that AdSense won't pay me. There's the bottom line. AdSense, because my videos contain violence, they don't want anything to do with me. So there's no benefit to me to having a YouTube channel. I can monetize somewhere there, but and people say, well, you know, gosh, John, why don't you put them there so that people can watch them? Well, I put them on my website for people to watch them. So if somebody doesn't have a social media presence, they just go to activeselfprotection.com, and literally every single video is there. So if you don't have and they're there, I only put the first in the written comments. I only put the first lesson on Facebook. I usually do at least 4 or 5 more in written format on our website. In addition,
oh wow, I didn't
to what
know
you
that.
Get in the narration. Yeah, so
that's activeselfprotection.com.
Yeah, activeselfprotection.com. And in every video on Facebook, I have a hyperlink in the video that says, hey, there's more lessons here in this. Click here, and you go to our website.
Oh, yeah,
you
know, yeah,
the video
sure.
is there as well, and there's more information there. I add additional lessons that aren't in the narration because there's only so much time.
Has Facebook ever removed any of your videos?
Oh, yeah, a couple. So I've had I get occasionally – I'll get the warning gates, so I'll have enough people that will report a video that Facebook will be like, hey, we're gonna put a gate over this to make sure people want it. In fact, I have a contact now who's a senior design engineer at Facebook, and I have actually asked him to put some mechanism in there that I can put that on there before the video ever launches, so then that way the ones that I know are gonna kind of trigger people, I can put that gate on to get started. I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. But
you're very careful about putting warnings out, I mean, before they even start. So somebody can't really say that they stumbled, you know, like they were caught off guard. I mean, you warn and double warn sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I want to be careful with that stuff. So have they ever? Yeah. I'm very grateful that in the last couple of months in particular, you know, like I said, I got to know a couple of folks in the design engineering folks at Facebook who are pro-gun, pro-Second Amendment, patriot folks. And they're not very many. I mean, you know, being headquartered in the Silicon Valley of the Bay Area, they're a pretty liberal group. But there's a couple of right-wingers there. And getting to know them, when things aren't quite right, I can generally at least go, hey, guys, this doesn't seem fair to me. This doesn't seem right. And we've been able to stay away from many problems, but and help others too. You know, help other pages that have had similar problems. It has happened a couple times. I've had I had a bad stretch there where I got banned from Facebook for 7 days.
Shame on
my,
you!
On
you
my,
went to Facebook
yeah,
jail.
Well,
did you see all my scrapings on the wall there?
For,
I think I've got at least a couple of those little things where you have the 4 dashes in the diagonal. When you're counting your days.
I've
filled a couple walls in there in my day.
So I got sent to Facebook jail for a while. Thankfully, I have a great admin team and a backup profile that I can,
right.
You know.
Yeah, that's it right there.
Put stuff on but,
all right,
know,
man. You said you'd give me an hour. You gave me an hour and a half. That's great, man. I really appreciate that.
Well, hey, thanks for having me.
So you're one of my heroes, so I got to get a bumper from you. It's hi, this is John Correa, and you're listening to the Sworn American Sheepdogs. Go.
Hi, this is John Correa, and you're listening to the Sworn American Sheepdogs.
Perfect. All right, any last things that you want to say before we cut out of here?
Hey, man, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate you. And, you know, I think it takes good people to protect themselves and their families, and not only themselves and their families, but their cities, their counties, their states, their country. So keep doing what you do, man. I think it matters, and I think you're making a difference.
Ah, thank you. You too, brother. All right, let's get out of here. Oh, hey, Sally,
all
thanks
right,
for so. Calling. We'll talk to you later. And 337 and 210, you shouldn't have fallen asleep. Talk to you later.
All right, bye-bye.